20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Today, we are doing something a little bit different. I guess I'm stealing Dusty, Steve, and Sarah's thunder a little bit. I know they love to do some Twitter questions week by week, but what I'm going to be doing today is doing a offline Q&A and answering some questions from Pack-A-Day podcast fans about training camp or some just general Packers questions as well. Obviously, we do the members Q&As every single week. Happy hours will be coming back probably sooner rather than later. I'm hoping as soon as next week when training camp kicks off. And of course, Pack-A-Day Live will come back in season as well. But I haven't had the opportunity to do an offline Q&A in some time. And I know some people that listen to the podcast every single day either are not members, which is totally cool, totally fine, or don't have the ability to hop on live for some of the shows. So I wanted to give the opportunity to everyone to ask some questions and go through those as we again get ready for this Packer season and specifically training camp next week. We have a ton of awesome questions. I think I got about 20 of them here. So let's jump in and get started right away with Chasten Vruink's question. Who will be the most impactful Packer rookie this season? Obviously, a variety of different ways you could go here. Jordan Morgan, I still expect to have an impact on this team in some capacity, even if he doesn't start the season as a starting offensive lineman. He's going to be needed in almost certainty at some point this year. Marshawn Lloyd, I expect to have a role within this offense, but you're probably looking at the two players that are going to be likely legitimate starters from day one, and that is Edgerrin Cooper, and that is, of course, Javon Bullard. And for me, most impactful is going to be Edgerrin Cooper for a couple reasons, both good and bad. One, in comparison to Javon Bullard, he's going to be closer to the line of scrimmage. He's going to probably be involved in more plays. When you're in the middle of the defense, literally smack dab in the middle of the defense, you're going to have more things that are going to be funneled to you, and you're just going to be involved in more plays than Javon Bullard will likely be. Number two, I think with his playmaking and explosiveness and his just unadulterated speed, I think he is going to be flashing all over the place. I think he is in line to make some big time plays right away this year and make an impact on the field in a positive way. But I will also say, when you are a rookie inside linebacker, you are thrown literally in the thick of things, in the middle of things, and there are going to be mistakes that happen along the way as well. And those will also have an impact. We saw that with Quay. Quay had a variety of rookie hiccups as an inside linebacker his rookie season, and you sort of live with those, and you hope that they continue to improve as their career goes along. So for all of those reasons, the most likely, along with Javon Bullard, to start, I think he has, again, the more likelihood to make an impact because he's involved in more plays. I think he, in all likelihood, is maybe just a little bit more of a dynamic, explosive playmaker on defense than maybe Javon Bullard is from day one, at least, again, position specific. And then I think there could be some more opportunity for some growing pains as well. For all of those reasons, I think Edgerrin Cooper will be the most impactful Packers rookie this year, again, both good, bad, and everything in between. D. Rich asks, which second-year players, he actually had the same question that Chasten had at the beginning as far as a rookie, but he also asked, which second-year players will become even more impactful to this team? A variety of ways you could go with this one as well. I have sort of three tiers on this one. I'll go with my initial gut answer on this, and that was Tucker Kraft and Luke Musgrave. I think these two tight ends, I think they can be as good as they want to be at tight end. I really, really do. Especially Tucker Kraft, well-rounded, all-around player. I think he can legitimately become a top-tier tight end in this league. And Luke Musgrave is right there too. And wouldn't shock me if Luke Musgrave became better, had a better season, had a better career than Tucker Kraft too. I think those two are going to battle it out. But both of them are ultra-talented. And tight end is usually a position that takes a hot second to sort of get everything down. There is a lot to learn as a rookie at tight end. I cannot tell you how impressed I was with both of those young tight ends grading in the positive as rookies. So many times, like, you go with so many of these tight ends not named Mercedes Lewis over the years, and just their blocking alone is almost going to get them a negative grade for the year. And that's just kind of the nature of it, because it's such a tough position. You're asked to do so many different blocking assignments as a tight end, and those are tough asks. You're just sometimes literally holding on for dear life, because it's really difficult to block some of these players that they're asked to block. And then as route runners in the NFL and learning this Matt LaFleur offense, that's not easy as a rookie either. There are so many things that go into being a rookie tight end. You basically, all the wide receiver stuff, you got to know. All the offensive line stuff, you got to know. All the blitz pickup stuff, you got to know. All the checks, the audibles, you got to know. There is so much that goes into that position. And the fact that Kraft and Musgrave played it as well as they did as rookies, I cannot even begin to tell you how impressive that is. And now, a year further in the system, a year in the actual weight room program and with the off season to get better and improve their body and everything like that. I know Kraft had the pec injury, which is probably going to set him back a little bit, but overall, this is still something that I think these two can take a significant step. And now when you have all these incredible wide receivers that are going to be taking attention from defenses, Josh Jacobs at running back, Marshawn Lloyd, there's a lot of attention going on in a lot of different places. And I think that's going to open up things even more for Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft to be the safety valves, to be the red zone threats, to be the just kind of overall weapons when you need someone that teams maybe aren't going to be scheming for. And that's exactly what you want, because those two players, Matt LaFleur will be scheming them. He will be finding ways to get them open. He will be finding ways to get them in run after the catch opportunities. And I think they have a ton of opportunity to take even a more significant step in year two. My next answer was Carrington Valentine. If he can become the starter, he has the ability to be much more impactful. And that is TBD. Eric Stokes is the potential starter there right now, but Valentine will be in that conversation and in that discussion, and that'll be up to him. And then, of course, LVN, if he can reach anywhere near, he's not going to reach his ceiling in year two, but if he can take steps towards that, you can never have enough pass rushers, and he has the ability to be a true disruptor. So he's somebody that should be on that list as well. And of course, you could go Dontavian Wicks, Carl Brooks, Jaden Reed. There are a variety of different answers here that could be the correct answer, but I'm going to stick with Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft. Jacob Wolf, year two jump that would have the biggest impact on the Packers season. So a similar question here, but let's say they all took a significant year two jump. Which one of those would have the biggest impact on the Packers season? Two ways I can go here, but I'm going to go with Carrington Valentine. If he took a legitimate big time year two jump and we saw him reach close to his potential, that's a legitimate, really good number two starting corner next to Jair Alexander. Sign me up for that. That would be huge for this team, because you could say, Musgrave, but if Musgrave doesn't, like, we already saw good Musgrave and Kraft. We already saw good Dontavian Wicks and Jaden Reed. Like, those guys are good already. We saw good Carl Brooks. We saw a rotational player in Colby Wooden. And even if he doesn't, there's other players along that defensive line that can step up. Anders Carlson could be another option here. LVN, again, we just kind of talked about. I think anytime you can add another dynamic pass rusher, that's going to be something that's of value as well. But if one of these corners does not step up opposite Jair Alexander, you have some issues. You have some problems, especially the way that Jeff Hafley wants to call this defense. So for me, if everyone took if one player could take a massive year two jump, give me Carrington Valentine, because I think that could pay huge dividends in the back end of this defense. All right, Jaeger 1197. Do they re-sign Clark after the Love deal gets done? I feel like I can't remember the Packers without him on the field. This is a tricky one. I've been talking about this on the show quite a bit as of late. I'll say a lot of the same talking points I've been saying over the last few weeks. Nothing would surprise me. If you told me they got a deal done right after Jordan, definitely could believe it. Sometime during camp or before the season starts, could believe that. During the season, could believe that. In the offseason, after he becomes a free agent, I could believe that. And if you told me they didn't get a deal done at all, I could believe that as well. One of the things I talk about all the time is I know we are all huge fans of these players. Who doesn't love Kenny Clark? I mean, he has been the image of a Green Bay Packer over these past, 8 or 9 years? I mean, just shows up to work every day, no drama, constant professional, has been really good every single year of his career. Who's upset with any of that? Like, hasn't broken the bank. Like, he's just been everything you've wanted him to be as a first-round pick and the way that he has handled himself in Green Bay. But Aaron Jones was a lot of those same things. In fact, everything, basically, outside of a first-round pick. And they released him to go with Josh Jacobs, to get younger and to maybe have someone with a bit more durability. The Green Bay, more often than not, is not in the habit of giving out third contracts. It's just not their operating procedure. And it would not surprise me if Kenny Clark had that same trajectory. As much as I'm not going to say I wouldn't like it or dislike it. It's just business. Again, but I will say this too. If they decided to make an exception for Kenny Clark, that wouldn't surprise me either. And like I said, nothing would surprise me with Kenny at this point. For me, and if I were the GM, and you can all, again, be very thankful I am not, I would let this play out a little bit further into the season, knowing that that could cost me more or that I could potentially lose him. It is supposed to be a very good defensive tackle draft in 2025. You still have TJ Slayton, who will also be a free agent that you have to make a decision on. And in the meantime, I want to see how his body holds up on another season. I want to see how he plays in Jeff Hafley's defense. And I kind of want to see him in a contract year to see if he just completely balls out and plays some of the best football of his career, because I think he still can. Though that's the way I would go. Again, knowing that if he does all those things, if he has a phenomenal year, and if he looks fantastic and he fits perfectly in Jeff Hafley's defense, the more that that happens, the more his price tag goes up. I'm willing to pay a little bit more to see it. Whereas if he has an Aaron Jones year where he plays half the year, has three different injuries through the course of the year, looks really good when he's in the game, but it misses a lot of time because of the wear and tear is starting to build up a little bit. All right, now maybe I have to make a very similar Aaron Jones decision where I say, I know how good he is. I just don't know how he's going to, or how many games he's going to play, how he's going to hold up, and what that decline starts to look like as he gets older and older. You don't pay a player for what they were. You pay them for what they're going to be. And again, these are extremely difficult conversations. I would love Kenny to be a Packer forever and ever. It just always doesn't work that way. So long story short, nothing would surprise me here. But if it were me, I would let this play out a little bit longer. Hey friends, most people don't tell you that one of the hardest parts of becoming an adult is trying to actually kickstart your credit. Young adults get set up with credit cards so early, and so many people immediately start to accumulate debt as they begin their college careers. I know that's exactly what happened to me, and this is why I wish Kickoff was around when I was in credit trouble. I absolutely love Kickoff because of its simplicity and its results. Here's how simple it is. You make one-time payments, credit bureaus see your good behavior, and your credit grows. And as for those results, users with credit under 600 increase their credit by an average of 30 points in the first month. And what's even better, there's no credit check, and you can cancel at any time. Kickoff is the number one credit building app out there and has over 100,000 positive reviews on the App Store. So join over a million people building credit with a Kickoff credit account today. Get your first month for a dollar. That's 80% off the normal price when you go to getkickoff.com/packaday today. That's Kickoff without the C, get KIKOFF.com/packaday. Must sign up via getkickoff.com/packaday to activate offer. Offer applies to new Kickoff customers first month only, subject to approval. Average impact of 30-point increase in first month based on Equifax VantageScore 3.0 changes for Kickoff premium customers with starting credit below 600 who made their first on-time payment between January 2021 and March 2024. Payment and credit activity outside Kickoff can have an impact on your credit. Terms and conditions may apply. Offer subject to change. Individual results may vary. Joe from St. Cloud, how many on each side of the ball practice with the ones, aka the top unit? I know it's more than 11, but how many are we talking exactly? Do players switch between the ones and twos during practice, or once they start practice, a guy is pretty much locked in where he's at for the day? So if you look at it this way, it's like a 90 to 91 man roster, right? Usually there's about 8 guys that are injured or not practicing. And then you've got a handful of guys that are special teamers, right? Long snappers, kickers, punter, that aren't going to be with the ones or the twos either. So you end up with probably about, let's just say 80 guys. And it's maybe a little bit less than that. We'll say maybe 78. So you really have 39 guys on one side and 39 on the other. And that's broken up pretty evenly. Now, you have the ones here where you've got your starting offense, your starting defense. You've usually got some rotational offensive linemen. You've got wide receivers that are rotating in, a running back that's maybe rotating in, tight ends that are rotating in. Like I said, probably, 19, 20 guys that are on offense with the ones, 19, 20 guys on the defense, and then same thing on the other side. That's probably what you're looking at. Now, here's a couple things of note. Think of it this way. Would you rather, let's say Xavier McKinney and Javon Bullard are the starters, right? And let's say Evan Williams is going to be safety number 3. Would you rather have Evan Williams with the ones where he's barely going to get any time because Xavier McKinney and Javon Bullard are going to have the vast majority of that playing time? Or would you rather have Evan Williams and Anthony Johnson Jr. or Evan Williams and Ketanji Ladapo be playing every snap with the twos? The answer is easy. You would rather have them playing every snap with the twos to get them more reps. So it's, it kind of how it goes is you put your starters here and on both offense and defense with a couple guys clearly that you want to rotate in, especially from like a wide receiver tight end standpoint. You're going to have Kraft and Musgrave. You're going to have probably at least your top 4 wide receivers that are over there. Probably your 1 and 2 running back. You're going to mix that up a little bit, but you're going to have your primary guys that are down there. Then you're going to get everyone that you want to get all the other reps down on the other side. And then sort of the next tier of players over there. And then you're going to have some leftovers, and those leftovers will go over and play with the ones, knowing that they're probably not going to get much playing time and they might only get a few snaps. So sometimes it's difficult to tell because you're like, oh my goodness. So for example, Zion Gilbert was with the ones, and you have to kind of like sometimes do a little thinking of like, all right, do we need to pay a little bit more attention to Zion Gilbert? Like Zion Gilbert's at the ones. This was a Ray Wilborn thing in the past where Ray Wilborn was reported as like, he's with the ones. He's been with the ones multiple times. Yes, he was practicing with the ones, but it was because he barely got any snaps. It was because they wanted their next tier of linebackers to be getting as many snaps as they could on the opposite side of the field. So it sort of snakes a little bit where you've got your primary big time players, big time starters, and really top tier, rotational players with the ones on both sides. Then sort of your twos and your threes rotating in over here, and then fours that are going to kind of play sparingly with the ones that might get a few snaps here and there. And it's not exactly that, but it kind of seems like that's their general philosophy on it. And sometimes they may not need fours. Sometimes it's not exactly apples to apples, but that's sort of how it goes. But you're usually looking at, again, about 39 players here, 39 players there, and it's split pretty evenly. To answer your other part of that question, you will see from time to time where they will pull a player from the twos and send them over to the ones. It doesn't happen a ton, but it will happen. And sometimes you'll see a guy go from the ones to the twos. Every once in a great while, that will happen mid-drill, yet like when it's all going on. More often, what happens is when they'll do one team period and they'll have certain players that are on each side. And then the next team period, when they separate them again, you might see a couple players that have switched in that second period. But it will happen from time to time, but not a ton. All right, Zach Stratton, which position group are you paying most attention to? I thought about this one quite a bit, Zach, because you could go again in a variety of different ways here. I'm actually going to go safety. I think this is the logical answer. Of course, we're going to watch a lot of Jordan Love and certainly the quarterbacks. Marshawn Lloyd and Josh Jacobs are going to, and even AJ Dillon. I think Emmanuel Wilson, worth watching at running back. That could be an easy answer here. I think I kind of know what we're sort of getting at wide receiver, but it'll still be interesting to watch. Kraft and Musgrave, same thing. I'll definitely be watching the offensive line, but it's offensive line in the trenches is definitely one of the hardest things to watch during camp. I'm definitely going to be watching Edgerrin Cooper, but outside of Tyron Hopper, not sure I'm super interested in the other linebackers. Corner's probably not the answer, but safety, you've got, not only do you have big time free, your biggest free agent signing in Xavier McKinney, you have three rookies, including Javon Bullard, second round pick, who's likely going to start, and then Evan Williams, who they traded up for in the fourth round. Also, you have Ketanji Adapo, who we haven't seen any of yet because he wasn't available in OTAs and mini camps. So that's why I want to watch him as well. Anthony Johnson Jr. in year two is rather interesting. And then so you've got three rookies. You've got a returning second year player who's at least of somewhat intrigue, your biggest free agent signing. And then even above and beyond that, you have a position group that is going to be used entirely different than what they were in the Joe Barry era. And I want to see how they use Javon Bullard and Evan Williams and Ketanji Adapo and Xavier McKinney, who's in the box, who's in the post, who's in the slot, all those things. So I think safety is the clear and obvious answer here for me. All right, we got Captain Keebles or Kebbles. Who might Green Bay send away at the trade deadline, assuming they do so for this thought exercise? All right, so let's say they get into a situation where they are sellers at the trade deadline is what Captain Kebbles wants to know. First of all, that's not going to happen because Green Bay is going to be really good. But let's say they do. Let's say, regardless of record, there's one name on this list that I think could make some sense, and that's A.J. Dillon. If A.J. Dillon is having a solid season, but Jacobs is killing it, Marshawn Lloyd needs more touches, Emmanuel Wilson's ready to go, and some team has some, you know, just obliterating injuries at the running back position. And like, let's say Dallas, right? Dallas could easily be in a situation to add a running back at the trade deadline. They're willing to call up and say, hey, we'll give you a sixth round pick for AJ Dillon. I think they have that conversation and say, all right, we'll take a pick for Dillon. And we feel comfortable still with Jacobs and with Marshawn Lloyd and Emmanuel Wilson. Again, assuming Wilson is playing well, or Jarvion Howard or one of those backs. I could see that happening regardless of the Packers' record. Just some team needing a running back. Green Bay has a surplus, or maybe you make some sort of swap, right? Maybe Dallas has something Green Bay could use. You know, maybe they have a, you know, rotational offensive lineman that the Packers, who knows, right? But maybe it's something like that, or maybe they pick up a sixth round pick and do it that way. The only other players on this list would be if something goes wrong, Jordan gets hurt, or somehow Green Bay takes a massive step back and they have to be sellers at the deadline. Kenny Clark would be one. If Kenny's having an amazing season and you haven't re-signed him to a contract extension and some reason the team is floundering, all right, guess what? Kenny's going to have some massive trade value because his contract would be workable and he's not under contract next year. Some team could use him as a mercenary. Green Bay would be, again, in a position where they're not ready to win right now because, again, that's the scenario we're talking about here, and they could probably get something decent for Kenny Clark. TJ Slayton could be similar. Slayton is a unrestricted free agent. If Green Bay felt like they weren't going to re-sign him, they were out of the playoff picture and were sellers at the deadline, some team came calling for Slayton, he could be another one. Same thing with Eric Stokes, unrestricted free agent. Packers are struggling. Stokes is playing well. They're not confident that a deal is going to get done, or maybe they just feel like Valentine's going to be the better option for them. Another player they could potentially trade. Jaire Alexander. If this team, again, is really struggling, takes a major step back, or again, just has major injury issues, and maybe Jaire's playing out of his mind, and you have maybe one last opportunity to sell high on Jaire, could they do that? Sure. And then the last is Preston Smith. Preston Smith's getting up there in age and down there in years, and at some point they're going to need to get off that contract. If some team came calling in need of an edge rusher, Green Bay was out of the playoff picture, and some team was willing to give up something for Preston, I could see them maybe going in that direction as well. The overall answer is I don't think they're going to be in that position. Hopefully, all things going to plan, they will not be in that position. But if something catastrophic happens and some of those players are playing well and teams come calling, those would be the names that I could see maybe Green Bay at least picking up the call and talking about, especially with some of those guys that are free agents. All right, King of Positivity, who do you think is cornerback two by the time the season is over? So my prediction is that Eric Stokes is the corner to start the year. My prediction is Carrington Valentine is the starting corner to end the year. I think Stokes will get the opportunity. I am not the biggest Eric Stokes believer in the world. When I say those sort of things, I would love to just be wrong. It would be awesome. I hope he goes out and kills it and has a Pro Bowl or All-Pro season. I will gladly gloat about how wrong I was, and he just goes out and kills it. I certainly think that his rookie season, he was a solid corner. Like, he was a worthwhile corner. It looked like he was going to be a longtime starter opposite Jair. I thought there were still some things he needed to clean up after his rookie year, but then he didn't. His sophomore year was brutal. Then all the injuries, came back rusty, understandably. And now I don't know what to think of Stokes, quite honestly. I don't know what sort of Stokes we're going to get. I hope he plays awesome. I hope he balls out. But I would not be surprised if it's actually Carrington Valentine who's the starter to end the year, even if it's Stokes to begin the year. All right, Alex Cardenas Flores, opinion on Keyshawn Nixon and his spot on the defense. I believe he's going to be the starter in the slot. I believe he is going to play the vast majority of snaps there. I do think they will give some big nickel looks, and whether that's McKinney, whether that's Bullard, whether that's Evan Williams, whether that's somebody different, we'll have to wait and see. But I think we will get a little bit of that this season, maybe 10 to 15%. But I do think Nixon's going to be the primary slot guy. I think we also could see a little of Jair in the slot in maybe some obvious passing situations, or maybe Justin Jefferson's in the slot and you want him to match up, one of those things. But I think you're still going to see 70% of the time Keyshawn's the nickel corner. As far as how I feel about that, how I feel is I am happy that there are players to compete. And what I mean by that is I do think Javon Bullard, Evan Williams, Corey Ballantyne, who they're cross-training in the slot, Kalen King, I think they have players now that theoretically could compete with Keyshawn Nixon in the slot. And if Nixon just wins it, awesome, great. No issue with that. I did think he got better as the season went along. I think there are things that he does well in that position. I think there are some pure coverage things that he needs to continue to work on. I don't think he's a great pure coverage corner. But a lot of guys that have to play in the slot, that is, like I said, the most brutal job description in the world. And I thought for the most part, he held up okay, came up with that huge play against the Chiefs. And I've learned sort of over the years, you don't bet against Keyshawn Nixon. He has made, you know, a lot of people look foolish for, you know, thinking that he couldn't play. Green Bay got him on a bare minimum deal. First team all pro kick returner 2 years in a row, starting slot corner, special teams guy. Nobody expected any of this. And he's proven a lot of people wrong. So I hope he goes out and crushes it this year. I think he will be the primary slot, but I would love if he took some sort of step. And I would love, I just love the fact that there will be a little bit more competition at that spot. Pack is back. Who's getting the most interceptions this year? I'm going to go Xavier McKinney. I think he has the ability to be even more of a playmaker than he had the opportunity to be in New York. I think Jeff Hafley is really going to give him opportunities to be put in positions to succeed and to make plays. And I think he will make the most of that. I don't know that it's going to be a corner. I don't think it's going to be Nixon. I don't know that Jair will get thrown at enough. I don't think it's going to be Stokes, and Valentine and Stokes might not be full-time starters. Like, they might rotate, or they might, you know, take the job from one another back and forth from time to time. So I don't think it's going to be one of them. Javon Bullard and everyone else at safety is a young rookie player. So I'm process of elimination. I'm going to go Xavier McKinney, and he's a big time playmaker too. Eli Scales, is this team to the point already where it's Super Bowl or bust, or is a successful season still making it past the divisional round? I don't think it's Super Bowl or bust for this team, because I think they're still a team on the rise. In one way, I feel that way. In another way, I feel like every season Super Bowl or bust. You know, there's obviously exceptions. There's sometimes, you know, you're just going to be bad. But when you've got a quarterback, I think already the caliber of Jordan Love and a team that is set up for success like this team, you want to make that run. I think there's a lot of ways that this team could still be super successful without having to win a Super Bowl while still learning some things this year. It's a first-year defense under a first-year defensive coordinator. There's still a lot of youth on this team. What I really want to see is continued growth and development. If I see players taking significant steps this year and they just have a ball bounce the wrong way in the divisional round or the wild card or the Super Bowl or even in the championship game, whatever it might be, as we know, those things happen and it sucks, but those things happen. And I just want to see this team continue to take the right steps in the right direction. And I think the window is still very wide open for this team for a while. So I don't think it's catastrophic. I don't think it sets them back. I don't think it's anything like that. Assuming they continue to show all the signs of progress in the right direction. That said, just go out and win the damn thing. GB95, your go-to order at Kroll's during camp. Well, first of all, I hate to admit, I think I've been to Kroll's twice in the last 20 years. I've definitely was there a lot more as a kid. Kroll's is good. I have no issue with Kroll's. It's not my usual type of like go-to restaurant. I will say this, you cannot go wrong with a Butterburger. You cannot go wrong with the cheese curds, and you certainly cannot go wrong with a malt. I will always get a malt when I'm at Kroll's. It's a good spot to stop at post-training camp, no question about it. Just not something I usually get to all that much, but nothing against it by any means. It's good establishment. Love that it's right there. It's a Green Bay classic. It's a Green Bay staple. But vanilla malt is by far and away my go-to there. Austin Armstrong, are there any schemes, plays that you are hoping that the offense can draw up and execute better this year? Yes, screens. I want this team to be a top-tier screen team. There's no reason they can't be. They have offensive linemen that can move and move well in space and get to their landmarks and go and block everyone that they need to on the second level. They have running backs that can catch the ball well out of the backfield. They have dynamic playmakers. They have tight ends who can screen well. They have wide receivers who can block. This should be a top-tier screen team. And they kind of low-key did not do well at all in the screen game last year. I want to see this team become one of the best screen teams in all of football. It's not something I think needs to be a huge staple of the offense, but when they call it, I want to see them execute it because there's no reason that they shouldn't execute it at a very high level. Tim, do you think that this is AJ Dillon's last chance with the Packers? The fact that they asked him to change his physique and position seems to indicate that this is his last chance. They did something similar with Amari Rodgers in his last offseason. Well, a couple things. They certainly did not ask him to change his position. He's still a running back through and through. There's no sign of fullback, H-back, or anything like that. He's a running back. Secondly, I don't think that this was an ultimatum by the Packers. I think Dillon knew he needed to be more explosive and more dynamic and tried to get the right body type for this season to put himself in a position to succeed. Maybe I missed a report somewhere. So if I did, Tim, I apologize. But I think this is Dillon trying to put himself in the best position to succeed. So I don't think it's anything like that. That said, I do absolutely believe that this is the last chance for Dillon. Listen, yes, they got him on that, you know, unique fifth-year veteran contract that pays him double but only counts half against the salary cap. The salary cap hit for Dillon is basically a vet minimum, and he does get paid more than that, but it's a vet minimum salary cap hit. He did not get anything on the open market that was worthwhile for him not to take this offer. And Green Bay, I don't think, had any expectations to get him back. I don't think they were willing to do anything more than basically a vet minimum. And had this, contract structure not been a benefit, had not existed, I don't know that he's back already. I don't think Green Bay was, really super intent on going above and beyond to get Dillon back. It just so happened that this contract structure did exist, that this benefit did exist, and that they could utilize it, and that Dillon was willing to come back for pennies, basically. And I mean, there's no reason for Green Bay to say no. There's almost zero downside to this contract. And if Dillon has a poor camp or doesn't look like himself and doesn't have the explosiveness or whatever, they can go in another direction with like $167K in dead cap, which they gave him guaranteed. It's something around there. So yeah, I think this is his last chance. If he goes out and crushes it, then Dillon will have the opportunity to see free agency again. Maybe he gets a better deal from Green Bay, or maybe he gets it elsewhere. But this is a huge year for Dillon. The writing is on the wall that he needs to do more. He needs to be more dynamic. He needs to be more explosive. That's a message from the entire NFL, because he is young. He has very little wear and tear because he's never really been a featured back in Green Bay. And this should have been the year that he went out and got a contract, a legitimate contract. And he didn't. So this is kind of his last opportunity to go do that. If he can't do it this year, I can't see Green Bay being super excited about bringing him back next year. Josh, who will have the best training camp out of the Packers rookies? I'm going Marshawn Lloyd. I think Cooper, there'll be a learning curve. I think Javon Bullard, there'll be a learning curve. I think all those guys, but I think Marshawn Lloyd will be in a position to succeed very quickly. I think he already showed how dynamic he can be in OTAs and minicamps. Granted, it was sans pads, but assuming that there's no issues with the fumbles, the pass protection, and assuming he looks as dynamic in pads as he did without them, I'm definitely going Marshawn Lloyd here. Christopher Karlecki, Kadeem Telford's likelihood of becoming the 8th, 9th, 10th offensive lineman on the 53. you know, this is an interesting player who I think is as much in the conversation for that ninth or 10th offensive line spot as anyone else on the roster. I really have any of those eighth, ninth, 10th guys on the roster. You've got what what I think are going to be your five starters: Walker, Jenkins, Myers, Ryan, and Tom, Jordan Morgan, and your other two rookies, Travis Glover and Jacob Monk. I think those eight guys are locks to make the team. And then for the ninth or ninth and 10th or ninth, 10th and 11th spots, I think everyone else is in that conversation. I really do. And I do think Telfer can get his name in it. He looked pretty good in guard in OTAs. Does he have a ways to go? Yes. Would he have to jump a variety of different players? Yeah, he would. But I'm intrigued. I think he's more likely a practice squad guy. But if you'd said that there was a surprise guy to make the 53, I could see where there's a world in which that's Kadeem Telfer. I really could. Not betting on it, not saying it's super likely, but not completely out of the equation. All right, two more. Jonathan Wild. Because of the new routines and longer warm-up periods, do you anticipate the practices open to the public? Will they start around the same time? It's an interesting question. I have two things that I get frustrated with the Packers about. No, there's probably more than that, but two things from like a practice standpoint. One, I'm still very disappointed that they've closed mini camps completely to fans. You had two open mini camp practices to the media. There was zero reason why those could not have been open to the fans. Zero reason. That would have been that's always such a great opportunity. Your first chance as fans to see the rookies and the free agent signings. Very disappointed that they went in that direction. And then the other thing is they will announce training camp starts at 10:30. And then the first two periods of training camp are done in the Don Hutson Center, where it's all the warmups and things like that. Now, to be fair, the warmups and that stuff is you're not missing anything. You're not missing anything at all. But one, could they do that out on the practice field, on the outside area? Yes, they could. Or two, just say that the practice is going to start at 11. Do your first, 30 minutes. So let's say it's 20 minutes of warmups. They usually do a period before that. Do the first two periods inside from 10:30 to 11 and tell everyone that the practice is going to start at 11. There is no reason. And maybe they'll do it different this year. It was not different the last few years. I don't understand why you say it's going to start at 10:30 and then the players don't come out until like 10:50. Like that's not doing your fans any service. Or at least tell everyone, hey, yes, practice starts at 10:30, but the first two periods will be indoors. That stuff, like they get a little bit too secretive for their own good and like non-transparent for no reason whatsoever. Just either fix it so that it matches up, like start your practice at 10:10, so that at 10:30, you're actually going to go outdoors so that your fans that are waiting in the stands in the freaking heat on the metal bleachers are not sitting there for an extra 20 minutes when they don't need to. But I do wonder, because the stretching and warm-up periods have taken a little bit longer this year. So I do think there's a chance that you could be waiting 5 to 10 more minutes outside for the players to get out of the Hudson and done doing warm-ups. Just tell people when the actual practice outside is going to start. I'm on a soapbox. None of this is massively important, but for a team that's owned by the fans, do them a favor. Like, and these are not hard things. These are like the simplest low-hanging fruit. Open up a mini camp practice or two because your fans want it. And then number two, tell them when the practice is actually going to start, not when it's in the indoor part. Nobody cares about the indoor part. It's like you go to the zoo and the animals on the indoor part. Nobody wants to see, you can't see the animal on the indoor part. Nobody's there for that. They want him on the outside. So I digress. All right. Victor Elvis, last one. Why do NFL kickers kick so little in the training sessions? If we compare with a sport like soccer, the players train loads and loads of free kicks after practice with no downside. In training camp, it's like 5 kicks each. I don't get it. Is it something to do with the CBA? Nothing to do with the CBA. You do have to remember the specialists will do a ton of work on their own. Sometimes that's in the Hudson Center. Sometimes it might be, again, before or after practice or whatever. There's only so much you can do. Meaning, it takes the long snapper, the holder, and the kicker all doing it together. You kind of want everything to work together, meaning all 11 guys on the field at the same time with a rush and whatever, with the field goal, like the, unit there. And there's only so much time in practice to dedicate to actual, field goal kicks or extra points. So I don't really have an issue with it. They get plenty of time in. You don't want to wear the kicker's leg out. And I get what you're saying. of how the soccer players do it. But, you know, this is just kind of a standard practice, and they will do a lot of like work and warmups on the timing of stuff without actually going through the final kick itself. There's a lot that goes into it. Again, I don't think this is a major issue. I don't think that this is anything different than any other team is doing. And the big thing here too is like the leg strength of the kicker is not really in question here. It's just the accuracy. And you, to your point, maybe a few more kicks would be better for the practice. But trust me, those kickers, they're getting a ton of time in on the ball on their own and just doing individual kicking or having the long snapper and holder hold for them. They get a lot of those kicks in just individually, and there's only so many times to do it with the team. All right, friends, that's going to do it for me today. Great, great questions. Appreciate you guys a ton. Really appreciate the thoughtfulness of these questions as well. I'm so excited for camp. I cannot freaking wait. It's going to be here so soon, but it still feels so far away. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, most hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Broad Dad, Brendan Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donna Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Dan Miller, Alex Huang, Arnaldo Espinoza, Peter Rataka, Caleb Cookster, and SoCal Pack. See you guys tomorrow. Until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.